listening to Season 2 of the Fairways People podcast, where we share inspiring stories, meaningful conversations, and the voices behind our charity. Each episode offers a closer look at the people and passion that drive us. Hosted by Fairways Managing Director Gareth Webb.
Hello everyone, so welcome to another Fairways People podcast. I'm Gareth Webb, the Managing Director of Fairways. And for our podcast today, we have the one and only Victoria Adams, a.k.a. Vic Adams, our executive head teacher for our school. So welcome, Vic.
Thank you.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good, thank you.
Good, good. Thanks for coming in today. So we're going to learn, hopefully I'm excited actually, to learn a little bit more about you and your background. So I'll give you a little introduction. So Vic, you've been with us now for around 3 years.
Yeah, I have.
You joined actually as the head teacher of Fairway School, which was Swanwick and Wallington at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then probably in the last year or so, you've now stepped up and promoted to the executive head teacher. And now you really oversee all our education department. So that consists of Glade School, Wallington and Swanwick.
Yes, that's right.
So it's grown quite rapidly since you've been here as well.
Yeah.
You're a qualified teacher in English and drama originally.
I am, yes.
Okay, and you currently oversee, like I say, all the school sites. You've got 4 direct reports of some head teachers and heads of school, as well as like your business admin.
Yes.
And we've got, and now probably around 140 odd staff now.
Yeah, we have.
In the schools, and you educate over 80 children.
Yes.
Wow.
Lot of children.
That is a lot of children. When we first opened the school, I think we had 5. So it just shows you
quite significantly different.
And it's a massive part of Fairways now. You know, our core services, which we've really defined this year, is education, family services and residential. So education is so key, and you deliver such a fantastic service to probably some of the most vulnerable pupils in Hampshire County Council. So lovely to have you today.
Thank you.
Prior to Fairways, you've had a successful career in of over 30 years in education.
Yes.
So hopefully we'll learn a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
So let's go straight in, Vic.
Okay.
So tell me a little bit about your childhood and where you grew up.
So I was born in Cambridge. And I'm the baby of 4.
Okay.
So I've got 2 older sisters and an older brother. Born in Cambridge, my dad was very much a businessman. He opened lots of different businesses around the country. And then we spent a little bit of time living in Sheffield.
Okay.
And then literally when I was 4, we came down to live on Hayling Island.
Oh, okay.
So I basically then grew up on Hayling Island, went to Hayling Island schools, went to secondary school on Hayling Island. And just had a really great childhood actually growing up on Hayling. Did a lot of sailing, windsurfing, was very much kind of part of that beach sort of life, going down the fun fair, chatting up the boys that did the waltzes, getting free rides on the dodgems. It was a really good childhood, but I have to say that it was punctuated all the way through by an incredibly strong mum, because it was my mum that brought us down to Hayling Island by herself.
Right, okay.
Because her marriage broke up and she basically sort of left very quickly, almost middle of the night job with 4 young children in the car. Didn't know Hayling Island and literally just got in the car from Sheffield and just said, I'm going to drive for as far as I can possibly drive. And we ended up on Hayling Island.
Oh, well, I was going to say.
Knew nothing. Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Spent a couple of weeks living in a B&B.
Wow.
And then, eventually got a house and my mum worked like 4 jobs to keep all 4 of us going. And just brought up really 4 really successful children by herself.
Yeah.
So,
wow,
she's
okay, interesting.
Absolute inspiration.
Is that where you get your work ethic from, then?
Yeah, I hope so. She was, and she ruled with an iron fist, but she had to with 4 kids. And, she was fantastic. So Hayling Island was really, it was a fantastic place to grow up because it felt really safe.
Yep.
There was a small amount of people on it. You went to school with them all. And we just used to, ride our bikes everywhere and have loads of fun. So brought up really in a single parent family, but with 4 of us.
So talk to me a little bit about secondary and school, and then what did you do from there?
Yeah, so I went to all the schools on Hayling Island. Then I went to Hayling Secondary School. And I wasn't overly studious at school. I was a bit naughty at school. I think I was I really enjoyed. I was very social. I thought school was more about the social aspect than anything else. So I can remember one of my teachers once said to me, Victoria, you are the sort of girl that if you give yourself enough rope, you're going to fall off the edge. And I just went, oh, OK. I thought that was quite funny at the time. And yeah. But I can remember just really enjoying the social aspect. But did my GCSEs, did OK. Then I went to Havant College. Okay. And I studied A-level drama, A-level art and A-level media studies. Okay. Didn't know what I wanted to do, but really enjoyed college. That was my A-level choices.
So you enjoyed drama?
Yeah.
And art,
drama, yeah.
Have you ever done any acting?
Yes. Lots. So I did, when I was on Hayling Island, I was part of Hayling Island Operatic Society.
Oh, okay.
So right from when my mum first joined Hayling, first went to Hayling, she was part of it. She used to play the leads in all of the shows. So she was on at the King's and stuff. So as well as holding down four jobs, she would be doing this as well. And so she got me involved really early. So it was, you know, like a munchkin and then a smurf and then a fairy and leading up to playing Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
And so all the way through it. And then when I was at Havant College, was in some of their plays as well. So I'd always been really interested in drama and acting. And I think when I left Havant College, I thought, I want to be an actress. That's where I wanted to go. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hollywood.
Oh, no limits.
So what talk to me then. So what happened with college? So you finished college and then what was the next step?
Yep. So then I went to uni. So I went to King Alfred's in Winchester, which was affiliated to Southampton University. And I did drama, theatre and television degree.
Okay.
And again, was, you know, really just loved drama, loved acting. And when I was at university, I used to, there used to be a production agency called Blue Heaven Productions. They used to work out of Port Solent. Oh. And they used to supply all the extras for things. So I joined them when I was at university. And I used to do like lots of extra stuff in programmes. So
any famous ones?
Yeah, I very narrowly missed becoming Mrs. Colin Firth.
Oh dear.
Yeah, it's my claim to fame. He didn't know who I was. But literally, he was in a Ruth Rendell mystery.
Oh, okay.
And I played the barmaid in this Ruth Rendell drama.
Okay.
I got to serve him a pickled egg and a pint of stout. And
lovely.
I got to sit next to him in makeup, but he was nobody then. Like, nobody knew who he was. And I sat next to him, and he introduced himself to me, and I introduced myself to him. And, like, little did I know that he was going to end up being... Otherwise, that's I might have tried a bit harder
to talk to him.
Yeah. Shall I swap numbers? But, so I did a lot of that. So have always really enjoyed, like, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay. Brilliant. So went to university.
Yeah.
Graduated.
Yes, I did.
And then
basically I, obviously I'd done the kind of Blue Heaven stuff and a bit of the acting side of things. And I, as the more I went through university, so I sort of, basically I did this stuff for Blue Heaven Productions, right? But what I also did when I was at university was I used to come back and stay with my mum, and there was a job advertised in the Ports Evening News for someone to teach drama to young offenders.
Okay.
And it was through a project called Portsmouth Safer Cities. And so on my first holiday from university, the first semester was Christmas, obviously, I saw this job advertised. And I thought, I could do that. You know, that would be really good fun. I'd really enjoy that. So anyway, I went to the civic offices and I interviewed. And a chap called Chris Adams, who, funnily enough, I'm now married to, interviewed me. And I got the job. And so what I did every summer, Christmas and Easter for the 4 years I was at uni, because I did an additional year and did my PGCE, for those 4 years, I used to work teaching young offenders during the holidays to keep them off the street. So we had sites in Wimmering, we had sites in Somerstown, Charles Dickens, we had them all over kind of the borough of Portsmouth. And you'd go and spend a week in each, and I would be delivering drama to kids to stop them being on the street and offending, really.
Yeah.
And that really got ignited my passion for not just doing drama, but teaching drama, because it started to show me that actually it was really impactful. You know, you'd get the initial like, oh, I ain't doing that. And then when they got it, and they did it, it was incredible. And the feeling they would get from performing something. So that sort of spurred me into thinking, actually, I'd quite like to teach. So I stayed and then did my PGCE when done my degree.
I bet you met some characters doing that, teaching the young offenders.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah. And some people that I still am in touch with now spent a lot of time in Portsea, so got to know a lot of the Portsea boys who are now like 45, 40, and they still keep in touch with me, which is really, really nice.
Brilliant, yeah.
And, yeah, just thoroughly enjoyed it. And then when I did my PGCE, I went to work in an EBD school. They used to be called EBD schools.
They did, yeah.
And I did one of my placements there. And again, just really enjoyed working with really challenging young people, because I just found that for whatever reason, I found it really easy to connect with them and communicate with them. So really, just really, really enjoyed that. And then that kind of spurred me into thinking, actually, I want to teach, but I don't want to teach in what is fundamentally classed as good schools.
Yeah.
I want to teach in much more challenging schools. Okay. And that sort of led me to my first teaching job.
Cool. And where was that?
At St Luke's in Portsmouth.
St Luke's. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a charter academy now,
isn't
it?
It is now, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so like I said, you've had a real successful career in education. So you sort of fell into teaching then, in terms of you found a passion with the young offenders, and then you did your PGCE. And I know you've, in education, you've had an exceptionally good career, and you've also taken on lots of different leadership roles. So talk me a little bit about your snapshot of your journey then to where.
So I started teaching at St Luke's in Southsea. Very challenging school, and you know, it was delivering sort of drama and then doing things like rock challenge with the students, so choreographing dances and they perform them at the Guildhall, and obviously and teaching English as well, but I quickly moved away from English because I realized that there was a lot of marking. And I wasn't really into marking in the evenings. And I thought, do you know, this drama, there's not a lot of marking. There's a lot of feedback and I can do talking. So kind of shifted slowly away from the English teaching, surreptitiously into full-time kind of drama. I spent 13 years at St Luke's. I fell in love with the place. It just became a real part of who I was, primarily because it was so challenging. We had a lot of young people that were involved in antisocial behaviour, a lot of young people that were involved in crime, but a lot of young people that came from really, you know, deprived, abusive, kind of trauma-led backgrounds. And it was just, I just felt so much passion to work with children, you know, like this. So for a long time, I just remained a teacher. And then at St Luke's, I became head of year 11, which then sort of gave me my first sort of taste of a bit of kind of a management role, because then I led a team of tutors and I really enjoyed that. And then moved on from St Luke's after 13 years, more because it became an academy. It stopped being St Luke's and became Charter, and I just didn't like the values that Charter came with. And so then I moved to have an academy, which was Staunton Park when I first moved there. So again, another really challenging school, this time in the middle of Lee Park. And then that's really where my career took off, I suppose. I'd been a teacher and a head of Year 11 at St Luke's. At Havant, I immediately got involved in the safeguarding aspect and leading student services. So I was teaching, but I was leading student services, and got promoted to an associate assistant head teacher. So like, you know, the sort of low level of your leadership. And then through that, just kind of worked my way up to assistant head teaching and learning. And then I was assistant head safeguarding. And then from that, promoted to deputy head. And then from that to head of Havant Academy.
Wow.
So, yeah, just, but, you know, took my time through it, I think, and just felt like I needed to earn my stripes I went through. I'd never been career hungry. I'd always worked hard, but it'd never been about the level I got to, it had always been about enjoying what I was doing.
Yeah.
So I felt like I took my time and kind of learnt my craft before I moved on.
I was going to say, sort of, how did you fall into that leadership? Was it a conscious decision, or did you start to find your skills were better suited? Or
yeah, I think just a bit of both, really. I think, you know, I was lucky. I had head teachers that really supported me and obviously saw something in thinking, actually, I want to kind of nurture her and bring her on. I had an absolutely fantastic head teacher at St Luke's that, you know, was quite pivotal in my career. And also finding my own skill set and finding my strengths around, you know, actually I could teach and I could teach well, but actually this was about empowering other people to do what they could do and empowering them to do it well, so that the impact became more of a ripple effect as opposed to me just directly influencing this group, a small group. You know, actually I could have more impact through that ripple effect.
Brilliant. So you were there, did you say 13 years?
13 at St Luke's and 12 years at Havant.
Wow, okay. So long length of service. Okay. So
and then I, between that, I also did 2 years at Fareham College.
Oh, okay.
So I also did a bit of FE, and I did a year at Portsmouth College as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And then, how did Fareways come about?
So I was head teacher at Havant, and really challenging school, and you know, I'd just taken the school through an Ofsted. We got a really good Ofsted. We'd created a real culture at the school where the parents were buying into education. The students were really happy. And for me, a big focus of Havant was about making sure that the students were happy, because happy students learn. But what I found was the ever-changing climate of education was about results, results, results. You know, that constant pressure around what's your progress aid, you know, all your added value, all of those things. And I think with the introduction of progress aid and the EBAC, the pressure just became to a point where the people above me, i.e. in the academy chain, stopped thinking about what was right for the students and only about what was right for them as an academy chain. Mm. And where did they sit on a league table? And I started to become really disillusioned with it and lost the passion really for it. And so I'd started looking for another job, and then I literally just happened across Fareways, the job, you know, literally online. And I thought, actually, this, the values of Fareways, what it stands for, just felt to me much more aligned with my own, in terms of this is about the children, this is about the young people, this isn't about what it says on a bit of paper about how well the school is doing. This is about, are we making the right choices for our students? So I just contacted Fareways and then came in and went to Swanwick, met Laura, and that was that.
Rest is history,
as they say.
So what, brilliant. And, you know, since you've come on board, I know you've dramatically changed, I think, the way our education department runs now. I think it's outstanding, it's exceptional what we offer young people. I think you touched on it earlier, it's not about the numbers or the data, it's about actually individual children and outcomes for them, which is fantastic. So I just come in, just from your, just to understand your perspective, moving from the mainstream secondary world to Fareways, quite a specialist profession, how did you find that?
That was tricky.
That was hard.
That was hard. It was a shock.
Yeah.
It was a shock. I mean, I can remember, you know, like I think it was like week one, and I think, you know, I was in the school and someone was going, oh, we're going to flip out, we're doing this, we're going here, and I was thinking, what, where's the learning? Where's the education? I don't understand. And it felt so alien to me. I think I was so indoctrinated in mainstream and the structure and the rigour. And I think where Fareways Education has, where we've been able to really develop, is that structure and that rigour from mainstream is what I feel I've been able to bring over, but we've been able to dilute it to match the values and the whole reason behind why Fareways exists. You know, we've managed to kind of take some of that, but dilute it enough to to work in terms of education, because it really was a struggle. And you know,
we've had some conversations.
I think, you know, I've had a resignation typed several times, and I think because it does take a lot to align the two, and it felt to me, I think initially, that we didn't have enough education going on, and equally, you know, I had a lot to learn about trauma informed and the way that we work. You know, I think in the early days I was expecting students to conform, you know, and I felt quite impotent at times, you know, if a student was not listening or not doing something that somebody asked, and I thought, gosh, what are the structures, how are we managing this? And I had to really rework my whole internal model of how we manage this. And that's been a journey for me. Alongside, it's been a journey for education to adapt to some of those new processes and the rigour that I could bring to that. But I think we've got that really well aligned now.
100%, yeah. No, definitely 100%. As you were talking earlier, you're absolutely right. You've brought that. The quality of education now is brilliant, you know, and what you've brought to that structure and rigour to our curriculum and in the schools in general has been brilliant, yeah, definitely. Okay. So talk to me a little bit about your role now then as a executive head teacher.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do, Vic? What was your role?
I like to split my week and spend a day a week in each of the schools. And when I'm in the school, for me, it's about supporting the head. Obviously, meeting with the head, you know, that quality assurance and that oversight of what's going on. But it's as much as that. It is about walking around the school, talking with the students, looking at the learning that's going on, you know, looking at the progress that they're making, listening to them, you know, sometimes so much joy in just standing and watching them play. Like that, the joy that brings me when I think about standing there and listening to them laugh or play football with each other is absolutely priceless. And, you know, my role is very much about making sure that the heads have a really good vision and a plan and a strategy around, you know, what the school looks like on a day-to-day basis. So they're, you know, they are key in that operational management. But I need to support them in what those processes, systems and structures look like. It's about giving them that feedback around where things might need to grow, change, develop. Working alongside them collegiately as a whole SLT team around what the strengths and weaknesses are of the team, you know, aligning what they're doing with, you know, Fairways in terms of the whole strategic, you know, your whole strategic objectives, and making sure that they fit that oversight of kind of the budget. Very much just standing alongside. For me, it's about standing alongside those head teachers to make sure that those schools run to the best and the best of their ability, and me sharing my knowledge and skills to support the heads to do that, really.
Yeah, definitely.
And helping drive that strategy with them.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And just linking in what you said about the joys of just watching the children play, I guess just to give an idea of sort of people listening, the profile, a typical profile of a young person or pupil in our school, they've probably been excluded from every mainstream specialist school. You know, at times we've been known as the last chance saloon. We work with young people that are probably mostly no other provision to support them or can meet their needs. They've probably encountered a lot of trauma and abuse in the past. So we're talking about real challenging young people, aren't we? Because when you say it, it sort of rolls off your tongue, but actually it's a real challenge. You know, you've got to be a teacher, a social worker and a carer everything. All in one of you.
Yeah, everything. But I think that's what draws me and keeps me in Fairways is because we do that so well. You know, what we do is we meet the need of the student on every level. And, you know, sometimes it's not about education. Sometimes it is about being that social worker. Sometimes it is about just being that listening ear. You know, the fact that children will come in and disclose some of the worst things you'd ever hear. Mm. You know, the trust that they must have. So the hard work that the staff have put in to get that level of trust. You know, every single member of staff in all of those schools, no matter what your role, God, they work so hard with those children day in and day out. And again, the pleasure in seeing them do that and know how much they're putting into that for the children is just, you know, and again, you know, as a staff body, you know, from where we were 3 years ago to now, you know, we've got the right staff in the right places doing the right things. You know, there's always going to be, there's always going to be, you know, issues and concerns around things we might have to address, but we've got the right people doing the right things and in the right way and our priorities are right. But yeah, we have got, you know, we've got children that have been through potentially more than we can dream of, and I think that, you know, that kind of links to my why in a way, that I was always, right from when I worked with young offenders, I was in awe, to be honest, of the kids I worked with, when the young offenders, because these children on this scheme all those years ago, again, had been through so much, and yet they came, they engaged, they were funny, you know, and often for a lot of them, humour or sarcasm was their mask. But they, just the fact that, you know, I think, and I say it to the staff sometimes, I say, you know, what's a bad day look like for you? You know, it might be that you didn't have any bread to put in the toaster, or you got in your car and your car didn't start. You know, that's a bad day, and that screwed up the rest of the day for you. A bad day for them can look a whole lot worse, and yet they're still there, they're still coming, they're still engaging.
100%,
and that, I just think that's, I don't think half the human beings I know that are adults could do that.
No, you're absolutely right, yeah. No, it's a credit, absolute credit to the staff and the school and yourselves. So just touching on some of that then, so what do you think, like, it's most difficult for our young people these days? You know, our pupils are so vulnerable. Yeah. They've been through so much trauma, potentially, in their early childhood, and yet again, of all this change throughout, in terms of education. But, you know, you've got all the issues and concerns with on the internet, the accessibility to the internet. We've got county lines, we've got grooming gangs, we've got sexual exploitation, drug, drink. What do you think's probably, what's the most significant risk at the moment do you see to young people out there?
I think it's all of those things, everything you've said. You know, I don't necessarily think there's one that's more prevalent than the other. I think the introduction of social media and how much they can access has just caused so many issues for so many young people. You know, we've got young people involved in county lines. We've got, you know, we're contacting and working with Prevent, you know, around anti-terrorism. You know, we've got children involved in, you know, sextortion, you know, child sexual exploitation, criminal exploitation. And all of those things have become so accessible to them through social media. And I think, you know, we've got, you know, the incels, that's a whole growing movement, you know, that is becoming more and more prevalent, and we're seeing more stuff around that. But I think, you know, when I think back to my childhood, and we just didn't have this, and it's amazing what can happen between a child going home and a child coming back to school the next day, you know, because the influences and the impact outside of school are so huge. And then we've got to pick that up the next day. We resettle and then we send them back out again, you know.
So challenging, isn't it?
It is challenging. And half of them, you know, not just children in our schools, but children, you know, full stop, are going home to some form of dysfunction. Yeah. So they haven't got, you know, what you or I would have given to our children in terms of that security, those boundaries, like, you know, knowing that you can tell me anything and I'm still going to love you and protect you and we're going to deal with this together. It's, they don't have that. So the whole world must be so incredibly confusing for so many of them.
Scary. Yeah, very scary.
You know, and tie into that, that you haven't been in education for years, you know, so you're educationally behind, you perhaps can't read as well. I mean, all of that is just, it's really scary. And all we can do is pick them up and hold them for the time that we've got them and try and give them as much education around that as we can.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a different world.
Yeah, absolutely. So you touched on your why. So let's just touch on that again. So, so what does get you out of bed in the morning to do the job you do?
I think... we talked about this the other day, actually, in the training I went to. You know, a lot of people say, like, oh, because I want to make a difference, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And it is that. You do want to make a difference. But I think it's more than that. I think it's about the fact that I find these children inspiring.
Yeah.
I think they inspire me. And I think... every day for me, it's about being part of that journey for them and watching them develop and grow, and actually how they can be so resilient. You know, how can they experience what they're experiencing and come into school? You know, and I look at them and again, like I said to you, you know, half the adults I know couldn't cope with what some of these students go through. Yeah. And I just find that I feel privileged to be part of that journey. And I think that for me is, you know, they're allowing me a window into that journey.
And
that's a real honour, I think. You know, when they share something with you or tell you something, and this stems right back to when I work with young offenders, and, you know, and I'm thinking, you're out in the evening burgling someone's house, or you've got a dot hammer and you're breaking into someone's car, and yet you're here with me, talking to me, sharing part of your journey. That's I'm touched that you want to do that.
And I think
all the time that children or young people respond to me, and I'll keep going. I think when I reach a point where young people just think, blimey, she's way too old, I don't talk to her, or she's boring or whatever, that's probably the time to stop, because then I'm not giving them anything. So I think it's less about what I can do for them. I suppose it's about how much they inspire me, that I just want to be part of that journey for them and see them grow and develop. And then I, now in my role, I have that, I'm really lucky to have that opportunity to support other people, to give them that.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and that's, you know, I'm just one person, but, you know, we've got 140 members of staff. That's 140 times just me.
Yeah. No, I love that. I really love that. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And we also talk a lot about our values and playing your part. And I keep saying this, now I have to keep saying it, but if you were to stick a rock, I'll break you in half. Yeah. What's the values that run through you, would you say, that are at your core?
I would say honesty, passion. I think when I really believe in something, it's very, I'm dogged about it. You know, it's really hard to drag me away from that. So if my passion lies somewhere, I'm going to fight and I'm going to fight and I'm going to fight. So I think I'm loyal in that. You know, I want to be loyal for those children. I want to make sure that everything is perfect for them. You know, that's, but I think, honesty, love, I think, as well. Just, you know, like my family.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No, definitely. I witness that all the time. You're very honest, Vic, which is what I love about you. You'll say how it is, which is great. And passionate. Christ, since you've come on, look at the school now. You're passionate. All what you've spoken about today, you're passionate about making a difference to these young people. And that is so genuine. So thank you for sharing that. Last question.
Yeah, God, that's gone quick.
So on my podcast, I've just been asking guests sort of a generic question. So here it goes. So, obviously, with the chaos and the complexities of everyday life, we know it impacts on our mental health and well-being. So my question to you is, what do you do for your own well-being, or what do you recommend?
Am I allowed to say Pinot Grigio?
You're the first one. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, you're honest. See, I told you he's honest.
I've got a dog.
How many bottles a night?
Yeah. God, no, I won't say that bit.
Got a dog, yes.
I've got a Great Dane.
Oh. A Great Dane?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He's our second one. We haven't got two. We had one and she passed away. So we've got a Great Dane.
What's he or she?
He's called Monty.
Monty.
Yeah.
That big, aren't they?
Yeah, huge. Yeah, he's 70 kg.
Jesus.
Yeah. When he stands on his back legs, he's about 6'4".
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What colour?
Blue. They call it blue, but he's grey, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I love walking him. We do a lot of walking with him.
You walk him, or does he walk
you? He walks me, but, you know, I pretend. And then you always get the people going, oh, you could ride him.
Yeah.
If only I had a penny for every time I had that. I'm really lucky because I live right near the beach, and the beach is a really special place to me. I think because I grew up on Hailing Island, recently just moved back to Hailing Island. So I spend a lot of time at the beach. I'm also I'm a very family orientated person. You know, I been married to my husband for 25 years. We've got two beautiful daughters. And, you know, I'm very close to my sister. For me, being with family, I would say, is probably my... That's where I feel my safe space is, bit where I can really just shut off and be me, I suppose.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and with my family, you know, we'll go for walks on the beach and do stuff. I'd like to say I go to the gym. I want to say all the right things. You know, I work out, I go to the gym, but I'd lie. I had a gym membership for 2 years and I never went. However, I do like Pilates, so I'll do that at home, a bit of Pilates. I've got some really close friends. Yeah, for me, I think it's being around people that I love, I think, and walking, brilliant, being back in nature a little bit, I suppose. Swimming in the sea, I love swimming in the sea. I'll swim in the sea even in the winter.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So swimming, that's really good.
I've just started trying that, like sea dip. It's supposed to be really good for
it's
you.
It's really good for you.
It's
really
getting a bit colder
you.
Now, though. It's I very can feel chilly. The difference.
Yeah. You just have to wear a bubble hat.
Yeah.
Makes a massive difference if you wear a bubble hat.
Or dry suit.
And
it's a joke.
That's cheating. That is cheating. So, yeah, I think it's surrounding yourself with people, isn't it, that you feel really safe with as well. You can.
Brilliant. So, family time's big to you.
Big.
By the beach.
Yeah.
Pinot Grigio.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Lovely.
And eating out.
I love
eating out. I love food. Love eating out.
I do, what's your favourite food?
I'm really easy, actually. I don't eat meat.
Okay.
Other than chicken.
Right.
And there's a story to that, but I won't bore you with it. It's just chickens aren't pretty, but other things are cute, so I can't eat them. I only eat chicken. But I'm really easy. I like Thai food. Yep. I love Indian food. Yep. But I love Italian food. Yep. One of the joys for me of going away on holiday is we've never done an all-inclusive holiday because I couldn't bear to eat in the same place every day.
Like
for me,
out,
it's choosing different restaurant every night, having something different.
Lovely.
Yeah. Love seafood, mussels, big gambas, all of that kind of thing. Yeah.
Mm, yeah, making me hungry.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Vic. Thank you so much for your time today. That's been really insightful. And thank you for sharing that with us. So, thank you,
and
say hello to Monty for me.
Yeah, will do.
And I'll see you all later. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.